This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith episode number 111, and it's early September 2015. Mary Izette, author of the new book, Speed Brewing, joins me to discuss brewing beer, mead, and cider. A quick plug for my newsletter, enter your name and email in the subscription box on the right side of the beersmith.com website, and I'll send you an email on homebrewing every single week. Join over 55,000 subscribers who get an article on beer brewing every week. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're now offering a full 6 issues a year, up from 4 at a great discount. Use the new discount now, which gives you 15% off everything they sell, including subscriptions and training. The new code is BeerSmith2015. I encourage you to check out this great new magazine for homebrewers at beerandbrewing.com and use the offer code BeerSmith2015 to get your 15% discount today. And also, Beersmith Mobile. The mobile version of Beersmith is a perfect complement to our desktop brewing software. It includes all the tools you need to create recipes on the go, share them with friends, and acts as a pocket brew timer. Check out Beersmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile or on the Google Play, iTunes, or Amazon app stores. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Mary Izette, author of Speed Brewing and co-host of the Ferment About It, a lively weekly show on all things fermentable on the Heritage Radio Network. Mary is also a nationally ranked beer judge and former president of the New York City Homebrewers Guild. She's written for Zymergy and All About Beer. Mary, it's great to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be on.
So how are you doing today? Things going well?
Yes, pretty good.
Are you there in New York City?
I am, yeah. I'm in Brooklyn, actually.
Brooklyn, yeah. I'm outside of Washington here in Northern Virginia. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about today about your new book, Speed Brewing, which I guess just came out. So let's start with a discussion about what speed brewing actually is.
Well, speed brewing, I guess, can describe a few things, but basically it's making it a fermented alcoholic beverage in around 2 weeks or less.
2 weeks or less, that's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So does that include everything? Is that fermenting, bottling, aging, everything?
Yeah, the whole thing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. When did your book come out? How long ago?
It came out June 15th, actually. It was the official release date.
June 15th. I got it there on Amazon. There it is. It is available on Amazon now, and it looks like Kindle as well, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I know some people enjoy making a day out of casually brewing their beer and then waiting a month or so for it to finish. Why do you think it's important to brew a batch so quickly?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think that we don't always, I started in home brewing. So I started home brewing beer in 2006, and beer is still my first love. But a lot of times, if you get a new job or you have a new baby or you're in the midst of a move or some other life change, you don't always have time to brew a full batch of beer. I mean, a lot of us are very busy. So I think it's great to have these as an option. Or also, actually, I just had a friend who did a German Maibach. He did a triple decoction, and he managed to make a 3 or 4 speed brews while he was brewing his regular 5-gallon batch of Maibach. I think
triple decoction, that's an all-day thing. I know that
yes.
for a fact.
So I think it's just great, when you don't have time or, a lot of these beverages they're delicious, but they're different. They're not available commercially. You can only find them you can only get them by making them. And so I think it's really nice to have, to have a mix, to have, more beverages in your repertoire that are easy go-to beverages.
Well, your book covers a lot of ground, too. It includes beer, cider, and mead. What would you say the targeted audience is really for this book?
Well, I would say homebrewers who the wide range of homebrewers, from beginning homebrewers to advanced homebrewers who, again, maybe all your carboys are filled up. Maybe you did a 12-gallon, batch of beer yesterday, but you want to make something, today, really quick after work. It's also for people maybe that aren't homebrewers, but are interested in fermentation and delicious beverages.
Well, let's start with chapter one, which basically goes into some basic brewing concepts. You cover equipment and ingredients. What are some of the topics there?
So I think the first section is all it's brew. So I'm doing brew in a bag. So basically, you know, the four main ingredients of beer: malt, water, hops, and yeast, and explain how the brewing process works, and then where brew in a bag fits in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I in chapter two, you do dive into brew in a bag. How does brew in a bag really save time when you're brewing?
Well, I think a couple of ways. A, it's generally no sparge. It's always no sparge. You're doing everything in the same vessel. Also in the book, I'm doing smaller batches, but given that everything is 1 gallon except the beers, which are 2 gallons each, any of these recipes are very easily scalable. I've done all of my 2 gallon beer batches in 5 gallons or more before. So there's all very scalable, but you do actually save time when you do a smaller batch. And again, there's no sparging. The cleanup is absolutely a breeze because you're doing everything in one vessel. So it's just a pretty speedy process. I can do 2 gallons of beer in from grain. So I have a mill. So from, you know, getting the, starting the mill to pitching the yeast, I can do a batch in about 3.5 hours, 3 hours, 20 minutes, 3.5 hours.
That's pretty good. Yeah. 3 hours is pretty quick for an all grain beer, right?
Yep. Yep.
Now, do you cover extract at all in the book?
I don't know. No, I think all grain really, I mean, first of all grain is ultimately less expensive and it gives you full control. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some absolutely amazing, you know, liquid malt and dry malt extracts, but I think that people can do all grain, you know, in a very short amount of time. It's very easy. Anyone could use this brew in a bag system from pretty much the beginning.
Yeah, it was interesting. I sit in on the industry forum at the American Homebrewers Association, and I think this year is the first year where we actually had more than half the brewers are all grain brewers now. And that was traditionally not the case.
Right, right.
So that was pretty cool. So most people are all grain brewers now.
Yeah. And I mean, it's easy. I think I have a science background, but I think all grain, with the amount of resources that we have and the huge amounts of different varieties of malt that are available to home brewers, it's very easy to do all grain brewing and get a really delicious beer.
Well, what are some tips beyond just using a brew in a bag method? What are some of the tips you use to speed up fermentation and aging and get your beer out quickly?
Well, I think A is starting, you know, all of these are session beers, so pretty much under 5%. You don't really want to push, you'll run into issues trying to push a higher gravity beer in a quick amount of time. I think that if you stick with under 5%, and some of these are even less, I mean, I'm really a huge fan of very sessionable beers, 3%, 3.5%, 4% beers, and those will ferment out pretty quickly. You know, bottling might take a little bit of extra time, obviously, if you're kegging, but there's a lot of options for brewers now as far as packaging goes that we didn't used to have.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those? Can you give some examples?
I think kegs, we have a lot more kegs available to us. Like, I'm a huge fan. So like I said, I do a lot of small batches. Mm-hmm. And even if I do a bigger batch, pretty much, you know, I've been doing a lot of homebrew club talks, and I like to serve beer at events. We are lucky in New York City that we have a lot of events that are open to the public that homebrewers can pour at. So I'm a huge fan of the 1.75 gallon kegs. I have a couple of the 2.5 gallon kegs, and then of course 5 gallon kegs. But really, these smaller kegs allow you to, I mean, the kegging process is super easy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really easy to force carbonate a 1.75 gallon keg and to serve it. I throw them in my backpack and, you know, get on the subway and can serve it pretty much anywhere very easily. And again, portable CO2 systems are great as well. But we have a lot more options even beyond that. Like, you know, I was noticing on one of the online supply that they have, you know, kind of these like mini plastic kegs that have the force carbonation caps that just screw on and that, you know, you work with a ball lock gas hookup, and so it's really easy to package beer in ways that we weren't able to until recently.
Mm-hmm. Any fermentation tricks? I know it often takes me more than 2 weeks to ferment my beer out.
Yeah.
What are you doing to get it out so quickly?
I think what's important, well, I think again, these lower alcohol beverages are really, they ferment pretty fast. I'm also a huge fan of dry yeast. I think, I mean, you can, particularly depending how you treat it. I think it's also really important if you maintain temperature control your first maybe 3 to 4 days, and then you can bump it up a little bit to speed it up at the end. I definitely think the other beverages in the book, you have a lot more flexibility on than beer, but definitely most of these beers that are, 3.5 to 4.5, 5% can easily be fermented out in, a week, a little bit less and, or a little bit more and packaged and, ready to drink pretty quickly.
Very cool. Now you have a lot of recipes in your book. Can you give us an example of some of the beer recipes you put in there?
Yeah. So one of my favorite is a Bia Hoi. So it's basically a Pilsner style beer that's popular in Vietnam, and it's Pilsner and rice. And I use rice solids. Those are very reliable. They're easy to get from homebrew suppliers and they ferment out super quick. So this beer actually has a turnover. You can go again from grain to keg in about, it's really designed to be about 4 or 5 days. You're using a dry lager yeast at ale temperatures, which sounds insane, but it totally works. And again, this was influenced by the fact that if you go to Vietnam, in certain areas of the country, they make this, very fresh Pilsner style, kind of it's a lagered beer that was inspired by Pilsners. And it's really delicious and fresh and sessionable and super easy to make.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that style. That sounds great.
And again, that is also something, though, that can be lagered. I had like a 2.5 gallon keg. It kind of got buried in the bottom of one of our thermo-controlled chest freezers. And we dug it out about 3 months later, and it was just as good as when it was fresh. So that's kind of the fun thing, is that you can also allow that to lager, and it'll be a delicious beer.
Now, you mentioned using dry yeast. You think dry yeast gives you an advantage in trying to brew beers fairly quickly?
No, I'd say not. It's just that it's inexpensive and it's really nice quality now, and you have a lot of control. So if you're doing small batches, you don't have to, you have a more control over your pitch rate. There's a lot of yeast in that packet. It's also really easy to split up. Not the wet yeast is, and I just think the dry yeast is great. It also, you can buy, I buy dry yeast in bulk, and then it really has a long shelf life in your fridge. I just think all of these things are, make it easy. Even if you really, obviously there's a lot of more varieties of yeast available in wet yeast than dry yeast, but I think it's just great to have dry yeast always on hand because it is very easy to use. It's really reliable and it can give you a really nice profile. And again, you can always have it just in case.
Yeah, I think dry yeast got a bad rep many years ago when we had, sort of bread yeast they were putting out and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but that's not the quality has improved dramatically in the last 10 years or so, 15 years even.
Yeah, definitely.
So a pretty big difference now. By chapter 3, you jump right into making mead. And I know a lot of homebrewers have made some huge leap forward in speeding up mead making.
Yeah.
What are some of the tricks you can use to make, well, first of all, describe making mead a little bit, but what are some of the tricks you can use to make mead a lot faster? It used to take like a year and a half to make mead, right?
Yes. Now, first of all, there is a difference. So what I have in my book is what I call short meads. So they're, again, lower alcohol, sessionable, honey-based fermentations. So I'm not making, 12 to 18% traditional mead. Right. Now, granted, like you said, there is a technique that's called staggered nutrient addition that you can easily find out. I think there's a really nice, if you're an AHA member, there's a really nice how-to on the Zymergy site on how to do staggered nutrient additions. And, you can get a full strength 15% mead in a month, and it's delicious. I have friends up here in New York that are award-winning mead makers, and I mean, their mead, my friend Bob will bring his mead in a month and it's amazing, but I am not.
I think almost everybody's using the staggered nutrient additions. And like you said, it's pretty easy to look that up online now.
Yeah.
But it gives you a good strength, full strength mead in maybe 2 months tops.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm doing is actually a kind of another beast entirely. So it's what I call short mead, for lack of a better term. And it's basically, starting with somewhere between a pound to a pound and a half of honey per gallon. Again, super, super scalable. And you're getting most of your flavors from the flavoring ingredients. So maybe you're making a mango chili mead or a strawberry peppercorn short mead. It's also carbonated. So it's really lovely, refreshing, you know, sessionable beverage.
So, I mean, what percentage are you making these at then? If you're
these are probably, but I'd say between 3.5% and 6%.
3.5% and 6%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what would that be for, let's say, a 5-gallon batch? How much honey are you using? I know typically you might use 17 or 18 pounds.
Yeah. So, no, this would be between 5 and, let's see, I usually use around 1.25 pounds per gallon of liquid. So, for a 5-gallon batch, you would use, what is that, like 6.25 pounds?
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty low, I would say. That's considerably lower than what you'd use for a traditional mead.
Yeah.
But it still comes out good, I assume.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's super drinkable. It's kind of like drinking just very light and carbonated and delicious. So, yeah, but a very different animal. It's not thick, you know, it has a nice light body, you know, but a lot of flavorable. And again, there's not, you know, no harsh alcohol. It's very low in alcohol, so it's very refreshing. It's great. These are some of my favorite beverages for summertime.
So if I'm a homebrewer looking to jump into making maybe one of these short meads, what's the difference in terms of process and so on?
As far from beer or from mead?
From beer. Let's say I'm a beer brewer.
Okay, super simple. So basically you're going to weigh out, depending on what ingredients you're using, you would use either a jug or a wide mouth jar and go ahead and weigh your honey into that, you know, somewhere between 1 pound and 1.5 pounds. Usually, like I said, I go for 1.25 pounds, typically. And then you're going to make a tea from your flavor ingredients. So strawberry peppercorn is one of my kind of classic short mead recipes. That's what leads the chapter. That recipe is instrumental in getting me the book contract. So you're going to make a tea out of that. You're going to add a little bit of beer yeast nutrient. I always say, like, for a gallon, I mean, it takes 1/16 of a teaspoon, which is about, you know, 1/4 of a 1/4 teaspoon, if that's what you're measuring with. And then go ahead and top the rest off with water, mix it really well, make sure that it's under, you know, 75 degrees, and put your yeast into it. The fastest short mead you can get is with straight up champagne yeast. I use dry champagne yeast.
So you do use champagne yeast. Do you use a particular, I can't remember, there's one particular type that most of the mead makers use. Is that the one you're using?
Yeah. I think so. There's EC 1118, which I believe is the same thing as the Premier Cuvée. So, and that's typically what I'm using. The reason is because it's very fast. A lot of times I'm not worried about getting, you know, I'm getting most of my flavor from these flavor ingredients, either fruit or chilies or maple syrup or whatever else I'm using, peanut butter, bacon, whatever I'm flavoring the short mead with. I'm getting most of my flavor from there. So I just want something that's going to ferment very fast with a very clean profile. You know, very champagne has a wide temperature range, wide pH range. It's really a powerhouse.
Yep. And give us an example of some of the recipes you have mixed together here.
That are in the book.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So the strawberry peppercorn short mead, of course, you can make what's called an Acer Glen. That's like a maple syrup short mead. I also have variations. Mango chili is one that's really delicious. The cool thing about short meads is that you can use a lot of the pre-mixed teas that are out there. So, you know, you can go to the store. There's an amazing variety of herbal based teas. I also like to make short meads with white or green tea. Green tea is really nice because it adds a little bit of tannins, and the tannins can help balance the sweetness. And you know, the people that put out those tea blends have put a lot of time into designing them, and they pretty much always work. And it's like a cheater, but literally it'll take you 10 to 15 minutes to make the short mead, you know, another week or so to 1 week to 2 weeks to ferment out, depending on your temperature and the amount of honey that you used and the yeast. You can use ale yeast with these as well. And you're, you know, so it's super fast and really tasty.
Now, is sanitation a big problem? Need to worry about with these low, you know, cause I know honey, generally is not a problem, but
right. And no, I don't. I mean, I come from a home brewing background, so you know, yes, of course, making sure everything is clean, and then I do recommend sanitizing. I use Star San because it's easy. But yeah, you know, keeping you want to you don't have to, I feel like because these are beverages that are ferment out quickly and that are meant to be really served and consumed pretty quickly, you're not worrying as much about sanitation, right. But you know, it's always better to stay on the safe side and treat it just like you would when you're brewing.
Well, by the time we get to chapter 4, you've already transitioned into cider.
Yes.
Pretty quick here. Yeah. Moving through there. Pretty quick book. Can you walk us through the cider making process and how it might differ from making beer or mead?
Yes. So cider is probably, definitely the easiest beverage in the book. So basically you're taking apple juice. You're going to add a little bit of beer yeast nutrient. That's what I use throughout the book because it's easy. It works super well. And yeast. And then of course, if you want flavorings, you can add those as well. But that's all there is to it.
So are you using regular apple juice or something
special?
Yes,
I am. I designed this book so that anybody could ferment. So basically with whatever you have on hand. Now I live in an amazing apple state and I'm able to get really incredible, heirloom apple juice every fall. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the time you can make really tasty cider from just plain store-bought apple juice. You want to make sure that it is 100% apple juice. But again, we're using the apple juice as mostly as a sugar source. You're going to get some apple flavor in the background, but we're really emphasizing is the other flavors. So I have a tart blackberry cider, or one of my favorite ciders to make is a dry hop cider. Now I'm going to tell you, if you're using a very expensive, hard to find heirloom apple juice blend with an Amarillo or a Nelson Sauvin hop, you probably, you might be wasting your money there. So, we're really emphasizing these other flavors.
So you're hopping the cider as well.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Dry hop cider is probably, that's one of my favorite beverages in the book. I've made it for pretty much every homebrew club talk that I've done.
The apple juice. Just mix the apple juice in with whatever flavor tea you got, right?
Yep. Or in the case of dried hops, you're just fermenting it. Then when it's ready to cold crash, so it's nearing the gravity that you want to drink it at, go ahead, add your hops, cold crash it, and then you're ready to bottle or keg, 18 hours later.
Now, are you doing these at low alcohol as well or not?
Yep. Yeah. So generally apple juice, it's going to vary a little bit, but generally my ciders turn out, it's going to vary from apple juice to apple juice. But we're generally looking at between 4% and 6% alcohol by volume.
So what percentage of apple juice do you use? How much alcohol do you actually get from, a gallon of apple juice or something like that?
Well, I'm finding the brands that I use most often will start with, they start around 1042 and they will ferment all of the way out. Now,
you're using pure apple juice then, right?
Yep.
And then just adding the tea of flavor to it, right?
Yep, exactly.
So you're not adding any water or anything like that?
Nope. You can. If you wanted to go for a lower alcohol cider, ultimately, like say that you wanted to do a 3 or 3.5% cider, then you could cut it with water and get, a lower ABV end product.
So 1042, sure. You're probably ending up with a 5-6% beverage, yep. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
And give us some examples of some of the spices you might use with your cider.
Well, I like to use a lot of fruits. So I think I get 100% frozen fruit puree. You could also make your own. But I have a tart blackberry cider that I think is really nice. It's really nice on the drier end. I'm a huge fan of lavender. Now, lavender is definitely not for everyone. It's kind of a love-hate thing, like cilantro. But lavender cider is one of my favorite things.
I love That's cilantro. Really,
yeah, I do too. But you know how... people do not always. I do a not so dark and stormy cider. So it's based on the, dark and stormy. So gingery. But you can really, the sky's the limit with ciders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, pretty easy to make and ferments through quickly.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, I really prefer dry ciders. Now, again, I'm in New York State. We have a farm cider bill that came into existence a couple years ago, and we have a huge number of cideries here making a lot of really tasty dry ciders. But, it's hard to find dry ciders sometimes when you're out, and they're really easy to make at home.
Mm-hmm. Do you do anything special? Do you carbonate yours? Do you not carbonate it? What's your preference?
I prefer carbonated because, again, these are low alcohol, so they're just really nice with a little bit of carbonation.
Okay. And then near the end, you got an entire chapter devoted to, and I don't even know how to say it right, Boozy Buick, I guess, and Kefir
Boozy
Beer.
Booch. Yeah, Boozy Booch and Kefir Beer. Yeah. And
Kefir Beer. What are these? I'm not really familiar with them.
So basically, you're starting with kombucha or water kefir, and both are fermented beverages that are, they're typically low or no alcohol. So if you go out to your local health food store, you can find kombucha almost anywhere now. It's generally must be under 5% alcohol by law. That's really hard to control at home, however. But a lot more people are making kombucha and water kefir. The general principle behind those is that you're starting with either a sweet black tea in the case of kombucha, or just a sweet water in the case of water kefir. And you're using something called a SCOBY. That stands for symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. Mm. And it's basically a renewable culture that you use over and over again to ferment, you know, either this black sweet tea or sugar water in the case of kefir. And I'm basically taking those products, adding a little bit more sugar, flavorings, and some champagne yeast, and you can end up with a really nice, you know, boozy kombucha.
So do you get these ingredients at the health food store, or where do you get them?
Yeah. So, well, generally, you'll have to start with the culture. You can grow up your own culture from, if you can find, there are certain brands of kombucha that have kind of tiny SCOBYs in the base, so you can grow up your own. Otherwise, there's a lot of boards online or other fermentation websites that people are willing to trade you or give away culture. The thing about both of these is that the cultures grow. So you'll start out with a relatively thin, small SCOBY, and you're going to have a lot of SCOBY in 6 months. They grow, so they're easily dividable. It's a very different than using straight up yeast. But again, you know, it's renewable. It costs pennies to make, and it's super easy. And I'm seeing there's just a lot more interest in both beverages. And it's, you know, again, kombucha is tart. It's more like tart towards the acidic rather than the lactic. I tend to find that kefir has more lactic in it.
Mm-hmm. So probably this is more bacteria, right?
Yeah, I mean, kombucha, they've found like up to 450 different types of bacteria and yeast in a kombucha SCOBY. So you're going to get a much, you know, kind of a beverage that has a lot of depth. And it's kind of an easy shortcut if you like sour beers, for instance, or, you know, more tart ciders. This is another option that kind of really feeds that, you know, that taste for sour and tartness.
But it's a very, very light beverage. And you said very low, low alcohol, right? Almost non-alcoholic, right?
Right. But when you add more sugar and champagne yeast, again, you're taking this low alcohol beverage and turning it into, you know, something probably between 3.5% and 5%.
So give us an example of a couple of recipes there.
So, well, one thing that I like to do is that we're going to go back to beer is that make, I think just a straight up tart cherry kombucha or any kind of cherry kombucha is really easy and really nice. And then that can be blended with a brown ale to make what I call a faux Flanders red, or a faux, you know, kind of a faux Flanders.
So you're kind of souring your ale with this addition, right?
Yep, absolutely. And there are breweries, you know, I know Crooked Stave has done several kombucha beer blends. And there's definitely breweries around the country doing, and it's super easy to do at home.
Very cool. And again, where would I find more information or be able to get the ingredients? Is there a particular website or something you could recommend?
So yeah, you could definitely, there's one called Cultures for Health that sells both kombucha and water kefir. And then the other I like is Yeemoos. It's Yeemoos. Those are both great. But also, like, we have a fermentation meetup here in New York City. There's a board online on Facebook called Wild Fermentations. Mm-hmm. And those are really good resources for, you know, maybe there's somebody in your town that, like I said, you know, if once you have these cultures, they will grow. Like, you have to do something with them or they will soon be out of hand and you will have too much.
They'll take over your house or what?
Yes. They'll take over your jars. That's for sure.
Well, you follow up with a chapter on sodas, and I know, you know, a lot of people have kegging equipment, know it, but they basically have all the equipment they need to make soda.
Yes.
Can you walk us through making a soda at home?
Absolutely. So these are actually spirited sodas. So they're all fermented sodas, but it's very easy to make. I mean, that's one of my favorite things to make is either a soda syrup or a straight up soda and keg it, because a lot of times you know, we want to have an alternative beverage on our keg that's or a non-alcoholic beverage. So either seltzer or soda. And it's also really nice to take to parties, especially we went to a family homebrewers family picnic this summer and I took a keg of seltzer and three soda concentrates. So this is kind of along the same lines, but they're all fermented. So they're all boozy sodas.
So you do. So I assume you start with a syrup like you would for a regular soda. Yeah, well, walk us through making a regular soda first and maybe then talk about how you ferment it.
So I think there's two different versions. I call, you know, kind of this malt-based soda and then the non-malt-based soda. And these non-malt sodas can be basically fermented sugar, fermented any kind of juice. I do a guava soda that's guava juice with a little bit of sugar. I do a really nice, I've been doing a lot of sugar-based beverages, although those are actually in the next chapter. And then the other are malt-based sodas. So you're actually starting with a little bit of crystal malt and to give it a little body. And those are root-based sodas because if you ferment, if you do a root-based concentrate, so you're basically making a tea, a sweet tea with these, you know, sarsaparilla bark or wintergreen or star anise or coriander or whatever combination that you're starting with, you're making a sweet tea. And then if you ferment that out, they typically get very bitter. I mean, there's absolutely nothing left after the sugar ferments out. So I like to use a little bit of malt to give it, you know, that residual sweetness that we enjoy with beer. Mm. However, with fruit-based beverages, it's pretty easy. They don't ferment out the same way, so you don't need to add that malt.
So, are you starting with some kind of a tea, a root-based tea, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I start with a lot of herbs.
And then do you typically add sugar then to ferment it or you said you're using malt obviously as well.
Yeah. Let me go back. So I have one for absinthola and yeah, sure. that's a combination of crystal malt and sugar. Then the other beverages that are just these fruit based beverages are more, that's just sugar typically, although there's a wide variety of sugars to use out there.
So these sugars ferment out. Are you left with a fairly strong beverage or are you brewing a fairly weak alcoholic beverage here?
Same thing, fairly weak. And typically with most of these beverages, I actually bottle or most of the time I keg, but it's easy to bottle. I use amber PET bottles that I buy at my local homebrew store. So you're actually bottling towards the end of active fermentation. So there is some residual sweetness. At that time that you bottle, you're going to let it sit out. The great thing about these plastic bottles is that you can feel, they'll get very taut. So you can feel when they're carbonated, go ahead and throw them in the fridge. And again, these are small batches. So they're meant to be drank in a couple of weeks. And you know, you have a really nice fresh beverage.
And then you finish up with a chapter on other fermented beverages from around the world.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through a couple of these?
Yeah. So let me tell you kind of the background. So we were in Cambodia last year and we were visiting an area of the country. It's rural, no running water. I don't think they had electricity. And they were doing palm sugar. So they would collect the palm sap, cook it down and make palm sugar to sell. So we asked if they were also making beverages and sure enough, they were. They would go up these very tall bamboo, these palm trees, collect the sap, stick these mysterious roots that we couldn't translate them to English and let it ferment for a few days. And we shared a bottle with one of the brewers and it was delicious. It was low alcohol. It was really refreshing, super interesting. And that is kind of, people make these beverages around the world with whatever that they will ferment, they will use that to make a beverage. And you can make some really interesting things. And I think that's something that we've forgotten in this country is that, you know, we're really good at home brewing and cider making and a lot of other things, but we're kind of ignoring a lot of the other wonderful fermenters that are available to us. So these are internationally inspired beverages. One of my favorite recipes is called a Sima. It's S-I-M-A, and it's a fermented lemonade from Finland. They make it every year for May Day. It used to be apparently like a honey-based lemon beverage, so more of a mead, but now oftentimes they just make it with sugar. So mine is, it's basically just a straight-up fermented lemonade. There's a ton of variations. I do a strawberry lemonade, I do raspberry lemonade, and it's absolutely delicious, and that's definitely one of my favorite beverages to make for the summer. I also have a recipe for kvass in there. Some other traditional recipes. Mabi is a really nice spiced Caribbean sugar-based beverage. And then let's see what else. Oh, and tepache, which is a nice, it's a traditionally Mexican South American beverage that's made from pineapple skins.
Yeah, I know when I was in Brazil last year, they were using them in beer, but they were using a number of native ingredients. They were blending in with the beer.
Yeah.
And fantastic variety of flavors they were able to get out of it. Really nice.
Yep. And I think that's also cool to use some of these ingredients in your beer. But one of the things I think that's inspired me to make all these other beverages is that a lot of times, like jasmine, for instance, I've had some really nice jasmine beers, but I do a fermented jasmine green tea that is just absolutely showcases that jasmine. And even though I've loved doing it in beer, really just the straight, you really get that just beautiful aroma and flavor of jasmine with absolutely no kind of intervention with the malt. So I think a lot of these ingredients, they're just really, they have their place in beer, but they have their place outside of beer too. Mm-hmm. And I think, once you know how to make beer, you can ferment out any, once you kind of know the basics of brewing and fermentation, you can make anything. I mean, as long as it has sugar and, very little to no preservatives, you can ferment it.
Very cool. We also host a weekly radio show on the Heritage Radio Network. Tell us a little bit about that.
So it's called Ferment About It, and Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 radio station that's in two converted shipping containers in the back of this amazing pizza place in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And it's just, they have a wide variety of food and beverage and all kinds of other shows. So we kind of started, Chris, my boyfriend, who is my co-host, is a professional brewer. So we had kind of started it more with an emphasis on beer, but we really got sucked down the rabbit hole of other fermentations. So I'd say at this point, we do an equal number of shows on either fermented foods or other beverages. And I think a lot of home brewers, again, once you know the basics of fermentation, you can ferment anything. I mean, kimchi, sauerkraut, pickles, it's all extremely easy. And it's definitely easier than beer. And it's related. It's the same kind of process, basically.
Very cool. Well, Mary, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I do have a newer project. So Chris, like I said, he's a professional brewer here in Brooklyn, and we started our own Gypsy Brewing Company in February. Nice. So our third batch is actually being poured around New York City now, and we're going to do our next batch probably in a couple of weeks. We're going out. Actually, we're both going to hop school this week in Yakima, Washington. So awesome. We will be, putting the final touches on our next recipe. So that's been exciting to kind of go from, I'm making all these half gallon experimental and then 1 gallon, 2 gallon batches at home to doing 15 barrels on the professional level. That's been a lot of fun.
Did you open your own nano brewery or do you have?
So we're technically kind of Gypsy Brewing. We're actually brewing them at the brewery that Chris works at. So it's really nice because he can do, he's in charge of every step of the process. It's been a really wonderful opportunity for us to be able to do that. And we're super excited. We're focusing on sessionable beers. Our last beer was called Revenge of the Emu. So it was it's about, I think, 4.5%, 100% galaxy hopped with Kolsch yeast. So we call it an Australian sparkling ale for lack of a better term, although it definitely does not fit within the new BJCB category.
Bottling and distributing that locally? How's that working?
Yeah, so it's actually draft only. And we're just selling it locally, just within the five boroughs.
And the name of the brewery again?
It's Cousette. So it's a combination of our last names. His is Kuzmi and mine's Izette. So it's Cousette Libations. And we specifically chose Libations because we would like to do some other beverages like ciders and short meads and some of these other fun beverages that we both enjoy outside of beer.
Nice, Mary. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So I think, I'm having a lot of fun. I think showing, really exposing people to these speed brews. We have a lot of friends that, brew in New York City or in around New York City that, like I said, they don't always have time. So it's just nice to have other options that are really enjoyable and fun.
Well, thanks for joining me, Mary. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And again, it's great to have Mary Izette joining me this week. She's the author of a new book called Speed Brewing. And she's also the host of Ferment About It, a live weekly show on all things fermentable on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks again, Mary.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Mary Izette for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, where you get your 15% discount on their magazine or anything in their store If you use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 when you shop at beerandbrewing.com. Again, use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 and get your subscription now at beerandbrewing.com. And also, BeerSmith Mobile, the perfect brewing app for your iPhone, iPad, Android, or Kindle Fire device. Learn more about creating great beer recipes with BeerSmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile or look up BeerSmith Mobile on Google Play, iTunes, or the Kindle App Store. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.